This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 28th of June 2019. Hello, and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper, with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 28th of June, which this week have been edited by Jane Pickard, Sheila Shepherd, and Sheila Shepard. Your readers today are Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful. The main headlines this week are Councillor's new role is questioned, Southern Water set for huge payout, and skydive for Jenny, 71. Let's have the story behind the first headline, please, Heather.
Councillor's new role is questioned. A former city councillor has sparked anger over an alleged conflict of interest by taking on a paid role with Boomtown. Lisa Griffiths, a Conservative, is working as a community support advisor for the festival, due to be held on the Matterley Estate in August. Opponents of the event have criticised her, saying she cannot represent her electors in the Alsford and Itchen Valley ward and the music festival. One, who asked not to be named, added that the appointment raised questions about how the council was handling Boomtown. He said, Councillor Lisa Griffiths is to be congratulated for being the first person on the City Council to admit that she is being paid by Boomtown, but some locals will wonder if there are others. As previously reported, the event has grown in recent years to 65,000 people, with a proposal to increase it to 76,000 in 2020. Councillor Griffiths' former colleagues in the Alsford and Itchen Valley ward, Kim Gottlieb, who is now a Liberal Democrat councillor, said, well, I look forward to her explanation, but on the face of it, Councillor Griffiths seems to have a significant and unacceptable conflict of interests. She was elected to represent the good folk of Alsford and Itchen Valley. Boomtown is a major event in the locality and she can't work for both the festival organisers and residents at the same time. Councillor Griffiths said she started a couple of weeks ago and has updated the register of interests. She denied any conflict. I already represent the views of residents that have concerns about the event, and that is something I will continue to do. My role is to talk to residents and advise Boomtown on how they communicate and explore what they could do better. It would not affect her role as a city councillor. It will not stop me saying what needs to be said. It is an opportunity to improve things for residents, which is why I took it. She said she now has no decision-making role at the city council, with the Conservatives losing control at the elections last month. She said she would not have taken the role if she was still on the cabinet, as there would not have been time. But Councillor Griffiths declined to say how much she was being paid for the three-day-a-week role. A statement from Boomtown said Councillor Griffiths has been appointed in a consultant-based role. Her role within the organisation will be to advise us on how best to deepen our channel of communication within the local community to ensure that we are utilising the most effective method to those who are most affected by the festival, are aware of what's going on and how best to communicate any issues or concerns. As a councillor of many years, Lisa's professional experience and knowledge of the local area, supporters and objectors alike felt like a great opportunity for us to further develop positive relationship and dialogue within the local community.
Let's go to Noel for the second headline story.
Southern Water set for huge payout. More than 2 million customers of Southern Water are to receive a financial rebate after the company admitted fixing wastewater samples and a series of failures in its sewage treatment sites. the company which collects and treats Hampshire and the Isle of Wight's wastewater and sewage, has been hit with a record £126 million penalty package after a shocking probe by the industry regulator uncovering the wrongdoing, including what were described as coordinated efforts to hide and deceive customers. Southern Water is now under criminal investigation by the Environmental Agency, although it is not known if this is into the company itself or individual employees. Regulator Ofwat said its large-scale investigation found Southern Water had failed to operate several wastewater treatment works properly. It says the company did not make the necessary investment, which led to equipment failures and spills of wastewater. The watchdog added that Southern Water also manipulated its wastewater sampling process, which led to it misreporting information to Ofwat and avoiding penalties in previous years. Along with the criminal investigation, Southern Water has agreed to refund £123 million to customers through their bills and pay a fine of £3 million. The rebate includes £91 million in penalties Southern Water had avoided and a further £32 million of payments as recognition of its serious failures. Ofwat Chief Executive Rachel Fletcher said, "What we found in this case is shocking. In all, it shows the company was being run with scant regard for its responsibilities to society and the environment. It was not just the poor operational performance, but the coordinated efforts to hide and deceive customers of the facts that are so troubling. The previous management failed to stamp out this behaviour and failed to manage its plants properly. In doing so, it let down its customers and operated in a way counter to the public service ethos we expect. That is why the company deserves such a significant sanction." Southern Water tweeted an apology for what it described as mistakes. Chief Executive Ian McCauley said, "There are no excuses for the failings." And this is accompanied by a picture of some water being poured into a glass. And the water looks incredibly lurid.
Let's go to Jane for the third headline story,
which is Skydive for Jenny 71. A grandmother is fearlessly taking on a 13,000-foot skydive to help fund research into the disease that killed her husband. Jenny Farthing, 71, from Winchester, lost her husband to a brain tumour and now fundraises to help find a cure. She is joining the British Army Red Devils Parachute Regiment Free Fall Team on Tuesday, July the 9th, and hopes to raise £2,000 for the Brain Tumour Research Charity. The challenge was inspired by the death of Guy, a garden designer who had won 8 gold medals at Chelsea Flower Show. He was diagnosed with an inoperable low-grade brain tumour at the age of 60. He underwent radiotherapy and chemotherapy, but died 2 years ago. Jenny, who has a 10-year-old grandchild, said, "I remember how accepting Guy was as we were told the news that he was living with a brain tumour. He calmly asked questions and held my hand. Having been married for nearly 50 years, I knew he would try to remain practical and realistic if either of us became ill. His tumour remained stable for several years, but sadly, in 2015, it started to grow again and became aggressive. I had to stop work to care for him at home, and it was awful to see him bedbound and unable to communicate. Losing a partner after nearly 50 years together was never going to be easy, and I have tried very hard to make sure that I make the most of the life I have, as I'm sure Guy would want me to be happy and have fun. I've always been a just-do-it person, and since losing Guy, I've completed the London Marathon and even abseiled up the Spinnaker Tire in Portsmouth for brain tumour research. For my next challenge, I wanted to step things up a gear. The skydive will be one of the scariest things I've ever done, and many of my friends and family members think I'm crazy for signing up to it. I am looking forward to doing something a little different to raise money for this vital cause, and I'm sure Guy will be really proud of me. Fundraising is a fantastic way to keep his memory alive. I also want to help raise awareness of the implications of this devastating disease, which can take loved ones away too early and also significantly reduce the quality of life a person has after diagnosis. Jenny's place has been donated by Cargo Store Worldwide, one of the world's fastest growing suppliers of shipping containers, who are a sponsor for the British Army's Red Devils Parachute Regiment Freefall Team. Michael Felwell, Regional Head of Community Fundraising for Brain Tumour Research, said, "We thank Jenny for taking on another incredible fundraiser for brain tumour research." And this is accompanied by two photographs, which I think must have been from Jenny's previous abseiling up the Spinnaker Hour fundraiser. One, she's climbing up the enormously tall tower suspended from a rope, and the main photo is looking down on her as she is right at the top of the tower, held by a rope, hands and arms outstretched, and a huge distance down to the sea and boats and crowds of people on the street below her. Terrifying.
And that concludes our headline stories. Now we'll continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, Bulgarum diary, first person, editorial comment, and question and answer, my Winchester. And we'll end with items of general news. I'll start with the death notices. Bud, David John Budd, MBE, peacefully aged 89. Graham, James Gordon Graham, or Dan, MBE, passed away suddenly but peacefully after a long illness, aged 81. Miller, Norma Helen Miller, aged 82. Rigby, Gwen Rigby, peacefully aged 92 at Abbott Spartan Care Home. Swain, Timothy Michael Swain, aged 62. And finally, Wildig, Margaret Caroline Carrie Wildig, and she was 84. Now we've got Christian comment read by Jane.
Christian comment this week is Old Etonians and Ordinance. The two-man Tory contest to be the next Prime Minister is asking questions of our future leader. What are their visions for Brexit? What do they think about taxes, education and the NHS? Will they help the poorest in society or the richest? What kind of person will our future leader be? This weekend is a big one for the cathedral. On Saturday evening, the bishop is ordaining priests, and on Sunday morning he is ordaining deacons. Both deacons and priests have been through extensive processes of discernment and evaluation before becoming leaders in the church. For some people, it has taken years before they are recommended to start training. Training at Theological College, of which the School of Mission is one, may take 2 or 3 years. Often, alongside their existing jobs, ordinands are put through their paces, learning all they need to take up their leadership roles. Their characters are also tested. We call it formation. The changes that you go through to put other people first, to follow the way of Jesus Christ rather than satisfying your own desires. Only after they have been signed off by the bishop can they go forward for ordination and take up their role as a leader in the church. Deacons are called to help people, to demonstrate kindness, love and acceptance in the world, and so share something of the love of Jesus. Last Friday, I was visiting friends in the Netherlands. He's a Brit, an old Etonian, in fact, and she's American. Their house was a bit full, actually. Jack was sleeping in the study where both American and Brit work from home. Jack is a refugee from Iran. He had an electronics business installing cabling and security cameras. When he was working at someone's house, the owner explained to him who Jesus is and gave him a New Testament. When he got home, he threw it to one side, but days later he picked it up again, read it, and discovered who Jesus is and became a Christian. However, he was persecuted for his faith and so escaped Iran, leaving behind his wife, sons, and business. He has virtually nothing. His plea for asylum has been turned down, and my friends agreed to give him a place to leave, to live until he has exhausted all legal avenues. Ilya lives in their tiny spare room. Ilya is a young Ukrainian man, 19 years old, and plays the piano brilliantly. He was offered a scholarship to study at the conservatorium in Amsterdam, but his parents could not afford the cost of renting a place for him. His mother put out a plea through the church, which my friends heard, considered, and prayed about. They invited Ilya to live with them. Having a meal with such inspiring people around the table was one of the highlights of my week. You don't have to be ordained to demonstrate what kindness, love, and acceptance looks like. You just have to have the character and follow the example of my American and old Etonian friend. And that was from Reverend Canon Mark Collinson, Canon Principal of Winchester Diocese School of Mission.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. 13 letters this week, and we'll start with one read by Heather.
Headed Proud Mum, Judith Martin writes, immediately after reading Peter Rees's letter in the Chronicle of June the 20th, describing members of Extinction Rebellion as extremist revolutionaries for closing a few roads in London for a few days, I read elsewhere that Sadiq Khan, the Labour Mayor of London, is planning to close 12 miles of roads in central London on September the 22nd. Khan is, of course, much criticised by that slash-and-burn, oil-and-coal-loving anti-environmentalist Donald Trump. Read what you like into that. I'm proud to say that my daughter was part of the Extinction Rebellion protests, although, unlike the daughter of a good friend, she didn't get arrested. They can vouch for the fact that far from the protests being pointless partying, as Peter Rees says, they were educational and informative sessions on what most thinking people now believe is the biggest problem facing not just humanity but the entire living world. Only an obdurate and disingenuous Home Office, step forward, Sajid Javid, would-be Prime Minister, would even think of pursuing 1,300 peaceful protesters through the courts. There may not be money for affordable housing or social care or even TV licences for the old, but there is money for futile prosecutions. Meanwhile, Steve Brine, in his letter from Westminster on June the 20th, ducks the subject of the leadership elections to say that our environment is much more important. He's right. But by the time this is published, his party will almost certainly have selected a leader whose policies and integrity have more in common with Trump than Brine. Brine recognises that it is young people leading the calls for environmental protection after his generation and mine have singularly failed to act on the warnings. I do, though, remember hearing Jonathan Porritt speaking from the Guildhall steps in the early 1990s about just this. Some of us were listening and trying, even then. Peter Rees seems neither to have listened nor to have tried. He seems unaware that the huge upsurge in his party's membership came from young people supporting Jeremy Corbyn. Whatever you feel about Corbyn now, his environmental footprint must be the smallest in Parliament.
Rosemary Poole writes about the Falcon threat. Sir, although I appreciate Mrs. Fox Russell's enthusiasm for our local peregrine falcons, letters June the 20th, my own enthusiasm is tempered a little, having read that although their favourite meal is pigeons and doves, they do sometimes eat songbirds. Mr. and Mrs. Blackbird, currently spending a great deal of time on my bird table, are giving me a lot of pleasure, but also anxiety whenever I hear the screeching of the falcons hunting overhead. It occurs to me that my blackbirds would make a very nice antipasto before their main meal. Perhaps whenever these voracious raptors are introduced artificially in future, nesting places could be out in the countryside rather than our town centres. Rosemary Poole, St. James Villas, Winchester, editor's note is, the snag is peregrines prefer nesting in high cliffs or tall buildings such as the demolished police HQ and now the cathedral.
And Jeff Naylor writes, a new Green Deal. Sir, contemporary capitalism is an outmoded EU-entrenched ideology that for the large part forbids support of national industries by national governments. The EU Commission and Parliament should recognise that because of global heating and the loss of wildlife, economic priorities are changing, and it would be a good time for the EU to facilitate the introduction of national versions of the Green New Deal, which is widely supported by European political parties. And that was from Jeff Naylor, Birch Close, Coldon Common.
Misleading. Tim James writes, I was pleased to receive a leaflet last week from the City Council outlining the proposed curbside glass collection starting in October. Although I applaud any broadening of waste recycling services, I would rather the finance was used to further household plastic collection to enable us all to recycle more of this ever-increasing waste product. However, I do object to my intelligence being salted by being informed by said leaflet that I shall shortly be receiving, quotes, a box for my free curbside glass collection. Quite clearly, my £88.95 increase in annual council tax for this year has helped to finance this. Come on, Winchester City Council. Please don't misinform us. Tim James, The Pastures, Kingsworthy.
Ray Cobbett writes, it's time for action. Sir, Hampshire County Council's Cabinet decision to recommend to councillors the declaration of a county-wide climate emergency is welcome news and follows similar moves in almost 100 local authorities across the country. Of course, declarations are largely symbolic and are no substitute for action on the ground. Carbon emissions from the County Council's operations account for around 1% of Hampshire's total. So the real challenge is bringing other local major sources on board to share the Council's and voters' enthusiasm. These will include transport, industry and agriculture with its heavy reliance on chemicals. We've seen from reactions to the government's push to achieve carbon neutrality by 2050 that the entire population and supply chain that sustain it will have to change to slow climate change before it becomes irreversible. Revelations on TV about the final destinations of plastic waste only serve to encourage public cynicism towards recycling, while airport extensions, new roads and houses built near the sea on floodplains suggest that consumption takes precedence over conservation. In the transport sector, our railways cost more per passenger mile to run and than any other in Europe, and there is HS2. The Council's motion calls for a plan which is likely to be easier to write than to implement, but it is progress of sorts, and we should say hallelujah for that. Ray Cobbett, Havant & East Hampshire Friends of the Earth, Beach Road, Emsworth.
And Richard Hutchings writes, City of Know-Alls. Sir, the overriding concern of seemingly most people here in Winchester is to appear either wealthy or middle class. Keeping up with the Joneses by any means necessary is as important as oxygen or water, proudly exclaiming in public at every opportunity that Clementine and Rupert simply adore being part of the college choir. Image means everything, though it is a false image, a gossamer thin veneer of vanity, which to outsiders might almost appear genuine. The people of Winchester are all world-renowned experts in political matters and will jump on any opportunity to lecture you on government and parliamentary things. Favourite current topics include talking at you about how bad Trump is and how bad Boris and Brexit will be. They also seem to have the gift of prophecy. Dispute their wisdom or shatter their bubble of self-grandiosity and they will attack ferociously. If Benjamin Franklin had visited Winchester alongside death and taxes, another certainty he would have picked up on is the inability of Wintonians to walk in a straight line without dawdling or observing personal space. The city is not big, and it should take no more than a couple of minutes to walk from end to end. scientists have observed glaciers moving more swiftly. Another certainty which Franklin would have observed is the absolute impossibility of enjoying a quiet or relaxing drink in Winchester. A seemingly empty cafe can be infested and overwhelmed in seconds by the deafening siren wails of children and babies, the sight of pushcart chairs congregating menacingly like Daleks, intent on exterminating any tranquillity to be seen across the city. And that was from Richard Hutchings of St John Street, Winchester.
Real concerns. Anne Titman writes, there are clearly many concerns for residents of Hyde over antisocial behaviour in the area and the reopening of Allen House. Hyde has a large population of vulnerable and elderly residents living in sheltered housing who are affected by this and feel threatened. The close proximity of both Westview and Allen House has exacerbated the problem and are the focus for blame and anger. Both are addressing the needs of homelessness and support for troubled people with nowhere else to go. And I would hope that planners and councillors would think more carefully about the kind of community when choosing a site for any provision like this. Hostility does not help in rehabilitation, and neither does the reduction of essential services due to austerity. Over the past year or so, residents of Hydegate, staff and residents of Westview, local residents and past and present councillors have met together to try to address the problems, and some progress has been made in improving relationships. My hope is that this goodwill will continue, and maybe Allen House residents can be involved as well. Anne Titman, Saxon Road, Hyde, Winchester.
Julia Sanderson writes about plastic woe. Sir, the British have been aware of the need for recycling for several decades, and I can remember back in the 1960s being told that unrecyclable yoghurt pots were creating problems. However, as a nation, we are mostly in favour of doing our best to help ease the overproduction of difficult materials. Reduce, reuse, recycle was always the mantra. However, there are two sides to recycling. There's the side of the consumer doing his bit to recycle as much as possible, and there's the side of the organisation which is going to do the necessary collection and distribution of those items. To that end, there are several ways for the public to dispose of unwanted items: charity shops, local authority collection schemes, and the large containers usually found in supermarket areas. Here in Winchester, I know of only one place where one can recycle mixed plastics, in the Sainsbury's Badger Farm parking area. Imagine then my irritation at finding that those two containers haven't been emptied for a while, and there are more than overflowing with bags of plastics lying on the ground. The organisations responsible for these containers need to be aware that they are one of the prime setups responsible for the amount of recycling achieved in this country, and that not to empty the containers at regular intervals is encouraging the public just to put everything into their household waste bin. The very fact that the containers at Sainsbury are overflowing means that one side of the equation is doing its bit and the other isn't. Julia Sanderson, Clifton Road, Winchester.
And David Hoggett writes, classic gems. Sir, I feel that Kate McIntosh, Chronicle Letters, June the 13th, should be a little more sympathetic to our classic car fraternity. She labels them alongside other older cars that are the worst emitters of the toxic fumes which make a major contribution to killing 40,000 people per annum. True classic cars, such as those that stopped on their summer rally in Winchester, are a minuscule percentage of the older vehicles on our roads. Many are rarely taken out as they are cosseted in dehumidified garages. They are well maintained by their loving owners, and a fair few have been converted from their original engines to modern alternatives, partly due to the difficulty of sourcing parts and consumables. Rather, as the National Trust, Landmark Trust, etc. look after our architectural gems, especially for future generations, so classic car owners do the same with our industrial heritage. Additionally, they do so at great financial cost to themselves, with no contribution from the taxpayer, apart from the very proper offer by Ken Clark, when our wonderful Chancellor, to exempt them from road tax. Fair enough, as they are hardly driven on public highways. Finally, these classic cars are almost all British, and we should applaud such patriotism. And that was from David Hoggett, Northbrook Avenue, St Giles's Hill, Winchester.
Sight loss. Terry Smith, Community Development and Support Manager of Open Sight, Hampshire, writes, age-related macular degeneration, AMD, is the most common cause of sight loss in the United Kingdom, affecting one in four people over 65, rising to one in three over the age of 75. The exact cause of AMD is unknown, but risk factors such as smoking, exposure to sunlight, and lifestyle choices are linked to the condition. Macular Awareness Week from June the 24th to the 30th is the chance to spread the word about how amazing our eyes are and to promote the importance of getting regular eye tests. A regular eye examination is an important health check for everyone, regardless of age, and can often detect the early signs of many eye health and conditions before symptoms become apparent. Open Sight Hampshire, the county's principal sight loss organisation, is happy to provide information about any sight condition or to give advice on eye health concerns. A free copy of Keeping Your Eyes Right is available by calling 02380 641244. That's 02380 641244, or by download at www.opensight.org.uk. Terry Smith, Community Development and Support Manager, Open Sight, Hampshire, Church Road, Bishopstoke, Eastleigh.
And here's Councillor Kim Gottlieb writing, saying that it's time to remove the planters. Sir, as the new administration wades through the mess of 8 years of Conservative administration, all sorts of issues and conundrums arise. Typifying the problem and epitomising the last Conservative administration itself are the new planters in the High Street. They are ugly, expensive and don't actually work. You could drive a bus around them if your inclination was to mow down innocence. Removing the planters and the oversized concrete-filled plastic bollards scattered about is not an immediate option, primarily due to cost, but hopefully we'll get to address them and many other mistakes over time. That's Councillor Kim Gottlieb, City Councillor for St Michael Ward, East Stratton, and he's got a picture here of one of the planters, which the top half of it, a wooden piece, looks quite attractive. It's got flowers in it. But the base is, I don't know what it is, lead, I don't know. And it looks stained and dirty and horrible. So perhaps he's right, it should be removed.
And Tim Lowry writes, drop diversion. Sir, I read on page 5 in last week's Chronicle that considerable amounts are being invested at Winchester Rail Station to encourage more cyclists and to reduce car emission pollution. On page 19, there is an article about the County Council's climate emergency declaration and the planning that will take place to address the issue. I then refer back to the aerial photograph, page 2 of King's Barton, which reminds me how substantial this housing development will be in practice and raises the question of how can diverting the Andover Road into the estate be consistent with the ambitions and policies above? Over 1,000 cars, lorries and buses each day, taking a longer route with more stop-start obligations and increased journey time, will guarantee a significant increase in harmful emissions, negatively affecting the climate both locally and generally. Finally, may I suggest that the Council commences planning its legal defence against claims from future residents that their right to breathe clean air and consequent health issues has been compromised by the Council due to the short-sighted and completely unnecessary proposed diversion of the Andover Road. Oh, the decision must be overturned. And that was from Tim Lowry, Newton Stacey, Stockbridge.
Hidden away. Hermione Golding writes, when I was asking why there were no signs to the cathedral bookshop, now that it is so tucked away, I was told that there was a planning problem with the signage. What has council planning to do with the Cathedral Close? Hermione Golding, St. Peter Street, Winchester.
And that was the last letter to the editor. Thank you to all of the contributors. It's time for your say. With Winchester City Council drafting a new homelessness strategy, we asked people what they would do to improve homelessness. And Noel's got the answers.
Yes, I've got the answers from four people. First, Rick Tarrant, 65, a retired city council worker of Baddesley Close, North Baddesley, said, "It's all to do with the economics, so I'd put more money into rehoming the people." And Sam Davis, 63, a teacher from Winchester, said, "I would try and make people take more interest so they would be in the right mind to help others." Jamie Horn, 40, a quantity surveyor of Winnall Manor Road, Winchester, said, "Well, the Tories are too busy fighting over Brexit to focus on huge issues like homelessness." And finally, Diane Wilson, 83, a retired driver of Martinsfield Compton, said, "Homeless people can't get jobs without an address, so I would do my best to get them accommodation."
We're going back through the mists of time now for historical news items from our files, starting with 25 years ago, read by Jane.
And 25 years ago was Friday, June the 24th, 1994. The head teacher of a Winchester school said staff did their utmost to help a pupil who failed to attend an exam after he turned up in jeans. Lee Saunders, 16, of Sutton Scotney, missed his GCSE geography exam at Henry Beaufort School, Hairstock, because he was not wearing the correct school uniform. A teacher loaned him some black trousers, but Lee claimed they were too big and said he could not sit the exam because it had already started. Head teacher David Dickinson said, "He alienated himself. He was not excluded from the exam or barred. There was still plenty of time to sort out the problems." He stressed that all pupils knew that uniforms had to be worn for exams. Lee explained, "I'd gone round to my friend's house after an exam and left my school clothes there. I didn't realise until I woke up the next morning. I phoned my friend, who said he would bring my clothes to school, but when I got there he'd forgotten my trousers." Lee put on his shirt and tie and went to see a teacher he knew well. The teacher found him some trousers in a school store and gave them to Lee. They were very big, size 34. I'm only a 26. The second item is the 28-year-old Winchester man who amputated his left leg by allowing a train to run over it at St Cross is facing a new threat, prosecution by Hampshire Police. Inspector Colin Edwards of British Transport Police Southampton confirmed that the man will be interviewed as soon as Winchester medical staff allow. He faces two potential charges of endangering safety on the railway and railway trespass. The first is the more serious offence. Conviction carries a maximum jail sentence of 2 years. Inspector Edwards said he will be interviewed, and when the medical staff determine he is fit to see us, a prosecution could be a consideration. The Transport Police were busy this week completing interviews with the drivers of nighttime maintenance vehicle and other railway staff who were passengers on the train which struck the man at 3:40 p.m. last Friday. Both drivers are believed to be heavily traumatised by the incident. Inspector Edwards said, "We hope to be able to speak to the man at some point over the next week."
Heather's going to take us back 50 years now.
To Saturday, June the 28th, 1969. Steel and Son Limited of 4 Chesil Street, Winchester, have recently accepted an invitation to membership of the National Selected Morticians Incorporated, an international association of leading funeral directors. Membership of this association is by invitation only, and affiliation with this organisation is considered an honour because of the high standards required. Invitation to membership is extended only after an investigation of facilities, standards of service and reputation has been made. The company, who have recently incorporated G. Stroud & Sons of St. Clement Street, Winchester, and who also control A.H. Cheetah of 122 The Hundred, Romsey, now join other leading firms in major cities in England, Scotland, Wales, Ireland, France, Sweden, Australia, Canada and the United States. And the second item is, passers-by will no doubt have noticed that for almost a year major building work has been going on at the centuries-old Christ's Hospital in Simmons Street, Winchester. As Mrs. W. Carpenter Turner recalled in her detailed history of the hospital published last week, Peter Simmons, a native of Winchester and a member of the Mercers' Company in the City of London, founded the hospital in 1608 with accommodation for 6 old men and a matron. Now the building has been completely reorganised and without in any way altering the outside appearance of this beautiful old building, the accommodation has been rearranged to provide 3 cottages, a matron's house and 2 pairs of flats, all extremely comfortable and convenient and very well appointed. The work has been carried out with the help of a grant of £3,000 from the Mercers' Company and another of £2,000 from the National Association of Almshouses, and the result of that £5,000 is a group of really delightful small residences.
Let's go back 100 years now.
2 items from Saturday, June the 28th, 1919. The first, as we reported in our edition of last week, a cadre of the 1st Battalion Hampshire Regiment arrived in Winchester from France at midnight on Friday. The men must have had a rather tedious homecoming, having occupied 10 days in journeying from where they were in Belgium through France to England. They reached Dover at 2:15 on Friday afternoon and took a train for London at about 5 o'clock. Instead of getting to Winchester by 9:10 on Friday night, they were far later due to heavy delays. And the second item, members of the Alsford, Botley, St Mary Extra, Winchester City and Winchester Country branches of the Girls Friendly Society, which includes several places within the respective areas, made special their summer festival by holding a Thanksgiving service for the cessation of the war at the cathedral on Thursday afternoon. Something like 600 girls attended, several associates accompanying them.
Finally, back 200 years with Jane.
And 2 tiny items from 200 years ago, which was Monday, June the 28th, 1819. On Tuesday evening last, as the North Devon coach was going into Whitchurch, it came into contact with one of Russell's road wagons, which was overturned in consequence of the horses becoming restive. And secondly, a highway robbery was committed on the person of Mr. Henry Stanley of Winchester, about a mile and a half from Andover, between the hours of 9 and 10 o'clock on Monday evening last, by 2 footpads, having the appearance of labourers, one of whom was dressed in a white jacket.
Back to the present, because Heather's now going to read an alternative look at the news. It's Belgarum Diary.
First look at the city's new pool. And there are 2 pictures. There's an artist's impression of how it will look with blue water, and it's all very beautiful. And there's the real here and now, which is a large building site with a big, big square slab of concrete in the middle, as far as I can see. The first picture of Winchester's swimming pool has emerged, albeit without the water. Construction of Winchester's new leisure centre is well underway at the Garrison Ground in Bar End, with the piling and the 50-metre pool tank excavation recently completed. Now, contractors Wilmot Dixon are undertaking pipework and concrete works, and the pad foundations of the building are also under construction. The leisure centre has been subject to a review by the new Liberal Democratic Administration after last month's City Council elections, but they have now confirmed no major changes will take place. Councillor Malcolm Price, Cabinet Member for Sport, Leisure and Communities, said, "We've taken the time to review the plans for the Sport and Leisure Park, and there'll be no major changes to the building which would result in the project being delayed. However, we will be focusing on the internal layout to ensure the facilities meet the needs of all users. We've already identified a number of sustainability benefits which are a key part of our commitment to make the council and wider district carbon neutral." As construction for the centre continues at pace, we look forward to engaging with our partners, local residents and community groups to ensure we deliver outstanding programmes and facilities for all members of the community to enjoy. Apart from the construction, a name for the leisure centre is yet to be decided. Regular readers will remember the furore surrounding the potential names which were blacklisted in January, one of which was Chalk Flower. The name caused controversy for the then Lib Dem opposition councillors after it emerged that former portfolio holder for finance, Guy Ashton, was a drummer in the band called Chalk Flowers. Mr. Ashton dismissed the furore at the time, saying the band ended in 2016 and he thought it might be a creative name. He said, "I thought it would be a nice gift." Other names poorly received include the Mint and the Soak.
A lot of stuff this week.
This week's first person is by Khaled Aziz, and it's read by Noel.
Yes, Khaled Aziz's item is headed Walking On By. You are supposed to do something if you think a crime could be in progress. The trouble, some judgments can be split second, others can go on over time. When I was a cub reporter, I well remember attending scenes where dreadful and sometimes lethal violence had allegedly been meted out to a partner or child. As with the police, the media want to know if the neighbours saw or heard anything. There were invariably people on hand, usually women with their arms folded, who would tell you on camera that there's a Barney round theirs most nights, without a hint of irony, as we with incredulity thought, well, why didn't you do something? Things have moved on since my days of treading the mean streets, and the police are much better at all this, particularly at what used to be described euphemistically as domestics. No longer do they tacitly support violence against women on the basis that a man's partner is his to dispose of as he wishes. Today it is treated quite rightly as a violent crime. So when should concerned neighbours report things? The first time they hear a kerfuffle? Perhaps when there's a crash of breaking glass or crockery? In prolonged rows, it's often at the later stage, at the point when the noise makes it hard to hear Match of the Day, or when they've just woken the baby. Should you record proceedings? Well, why not? With social media, most things are matters of record these days. The police tell me that body-worn cameras, pioneered in Hampshire, have meant fewer assaults on police and perpetrators have become less mouthy, aware that their conduct will be there to be reviewed in perpetuity by magistrates or, if merited, a judge and jury. It has given pause to some members of the police, too, conscious they need to ensure their high standards of customer care cannot be seen to slip. Whether freelance recordings by concerned neighbours should be sent in the first instance to a national newspaper rather than made available in true public spirit to the police is open to doubt. So, excuse me, when the Met's finest called upon Boris Johnson and Carrie Simmons and declared no further action was required, should that have been an end to it? Conspiracy theorists have suggested the police might have been cowed by the importance of someone who could well be our next Prime Minister. That is clearly nonsense. No sensible policeman want to risk an error of judgment which might later turn out to be catastrophic. I'm inclined to believe them. What about when something is kicking off and there's no time to think? That will surely be the defence of suspended Foreign Office Minister Mark Field after his somewhat exuberant treatment of the Greenpeace protester who appeared to be making a beeline for the Chancellor as he embarked on his Mansion House speech. Field's treatment so far is in stark contrast to that of estimable Southampton MP Royston Green aboard HMS Astute in 2011. He found himself grappling a rogue submariner with a machine gun who decided to settle a grudge against a senior officer with lethal force. Mr. Royston's instinctive actions prevented further deaths and received the George Medal. It all puts me in mind of the story of the small girl walking her dog when, for no reason, it turns and starts to savage her. With no thought for himself, a passers-by leaps on the dog and throttles it to death. This is observed by a Daily Mirror reporter who asks the man for his name, gushing, "I can see tomorrow's headline, Hero Saves Girl."
And we've got the editorial comment, and it's read by Jane.
And this week it is casting light on a private monopoly. Of all the public utilities, perhaps water is the one we take most for granted. We could, in theory, live without electricity and gas, but not without water. It makes the news about Southern Water even more shocking. The private company, which supplies most of the people living in Hampshire, failed to properly manage its sewage plants, off what the regulator has ordered it to pay £123 million to customers. This is a firm that was privatised in 1988 with no debts and a share of £1.5 billion government grant. Since then, according to the Financial Times, it is one of the water companies that has accrued debts of £51 billion whilst paying dividends of £56 billion to shareholders. That these companies have behaved shockingly is not particularly controversial. That noted Marxist Michael Gove stated last year that water company shareholders had received too much money at the expense of investing to reduce leaks and protecting the environment. Whilst again showing that private monopolies can be worse than public ones, at least this story indicates that Ofwat has teeth and is prepared to use them.
Now it's Question and Answer My Winchester, and it's going to be read by Heather.
Jane Drinkwater, aged 52, the general manager at the Bishop on the Bridge in Winchester, who lives above the pub, tells us what she thinks of the city. What is your favourite restaurant or cafe? Oh, there's so many places I love to eat in Winchester, I can't put it down to one. What is your favourite pub or bar? Oh, I like Greens to enjoy a Prosecco. A lot of bars in the city attract hen nights and rowdy groups now. What is your favourite shop? Most of my clothes come from Mint Velvet Monsoon Phase 8. The High Street isn't great now, though. What is your favourite building? Oh, it has to be the cathedral. The stories to be found in there amaze me. Favourite view? St Catherine's Hill. Well, to be honest, anywhere that's up high and allows you to see the city is a beautiful view. Who or what is Winchester's biggest icon? King Alfred. He's the pride of Winchester. And Winchester's best-kept secret? Oh, there's a little tea room opposite the Wickham Arms, which is absolutely stunning. What's the best thing about Winchester? The history. I love Winchester. It's felt like a home ever since moving here. I also like how you can get anywhere from here, like London and the sea, which isn't far away. It's all easy. And the worst? Homelessness. I know there's not much that can be done overnight, but it's horrible to see these poor people suffering on the streets. I wish there was something I could do to help. If there was one thing you could change about Winchester, what would it be? I wish the City Council would engage with shoppers. That way we could say that we want more independent shops rather than chain restaurants all the time and be heard. Describe Winchester in a sentence. The city that feels like home even to the newest of residents.
Time for What's On. On Saturday, July the 6th, between 10:30 and 12:30 in the morning, Chesil Theatre is holding its next open morning. This is its regular monthly, and it's a get-together for newcomers and existing members. If you've never visited the theatre, drop by to find out what lies behind the little red door. Enjoy a coffee with homemade cakes at the same time as meeting other theatregoers and see what's on next. Also, on July the 6th, on a Saturday, Romsey Choral Society presents Elijah by Mendelssohn. This is at Romsey Abbey at 7:30. Now, the ex-musical director of the Royal Shakespeare Company is Jamie W. Hall, and he'll sing the role of Elijah. Guest conductor is Tim Hooper and the City of Southampton Orchestra. Tickets are £20, £16 and £12 unreserved. Half price for children and students. And these can be obtained from the Romsey Heritage and Visitors Centre. You can also get them on the door, and more information is available on 01794 512 897. Now, there's also a performance on July the 6th of a thing called A Fruitful Season, and it's by Two-Time Theatre at St. Lawrence's Church. And Winchester actor Teddy Morris will be playing the part of Keats in a Two-Time Theatre's upcoming production of A Fruitful Season, Keats in Winchester. He joins recent Rose Bruford candidate Joshua McGregor, who plays Keats's friend Charles Brown, in this unique celebration of the poet's visit to the city in 1819. And I said performances are on July the 6th and July the 7th at 3 p.m. in St. Lawrence's Church. Tickets are £12 from Winchester Cathedral box office, or you can call 01962 857 276. Now, later on July the 11th, 12th and 13th, there is a new version of BBC's old TV classic, Blue Remembered Hills. And this is by Stockbridge Amdram Society. And the performance will be in the garden of the Borough in Longstock at those times. Tickets are available at John Robinson Butchers and Garden in Stockbridge, King Sanborn Post Office, or online at www.stockbridgeamdrams.org.uk. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 28th of June at 4:53 a.m. and begins at 9:24 p.m. And on Wednesday the 3rd of July, it ends at 4:56 a.m. and begins at 9:23 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings of the Winchester Talking newspaper and the Winchester Talking magazine, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. And if there's a problem with your Sovereign or Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging it before returning it as faulty. We're going to continue with further items of general news, and we'll start with an item read by Noel.
First lunch for old age pensioners tackles loneliness. The Silver Sunday lunch that took place recently was a massive success and a great example of collaborative working for the sake of a community in Winchester, say organisers. The main aim was to reduce isolation by attracting mainly older people back into the community centre at Garbutt Road, Winnall. Having had lunch clubs in the past, organisers attempted to bring people along to a traditional Sunday lunch. This was provided by First Bite, the community cafe from Winchester, who used surplus food from local supermarkets, collected by Fair Share, and used by First Bite to produce meals. They produced an excellent roast dinner, with all the trimmings, followed by a sumptuous orange sponge pudding. This was made by Rick Stein's dessert chefs from his restaurant in the Winchester High Street. Overall, it was a spectacular inaugural event, for which guests only had to pay £2. Silver Sunday was made possible by the hard work of Michelle Savoy, manager at Winnall Community Centre, Debbie Lockett and her team at First Bite, Lynn Rouse from Hampshire County Council Community First, Bruce White and Lydia Green from the Winchester Hub, University of Winchester volunteers who provided a super group of volunteers and some of the publicity. The lunch was also treated to some dance movement exercises by the talented Sam Gilroy, dancer, choreographer and teacher. It is surprising what can be achieved in terms of exercise from just being seated in a chair. And this is accompanied by a lovely picture of a lot of the volunteers, mostly young, cheerful young women.
Now we have County's Oldest Fete returns for 151st time. The 151st St. Cross Fete, one of the oldest in the country, will be held on Saturday, June the 29th. Held in the grounds of the medieval hospital of St. Cross in Winchester, the fete was first organised in 1868 to raise funds for the church organ. This year, funds raised will be going to the Parish of St. Faith, Winchester Home Start and Winchester Go LD. Jill Beck, secretary of the fete, said, "It is a real community event with over 150 local people helping and it's wonderful that it's still going strong after all these years. We are particularly grateful to our main sponsor, Carter Jonas Estate Agents, and Shenton Solicitors, who sponsor our refreshments. Stalls will offer homemade cakes, plants, china, books, and bargains on the White Elephant stall. Visitors can enjoy train rides, fairground rides, and children's games, everything from plate smashing to the coconut shy. Entertainment will be provided by the Winchester Morris Men, First Chandler's Ford Boys Brigade Brass Band, Punch and Judy, and the Ukulele Band. Pims, teas, homemade cakes and ice cream will be available. Local author Eleanor Houghton will be signing her recently published children's book, Porridge and the Big Pile of Poo, which she wrote whilst also working as historical costume consultant to Tom Pye, costume designer for the BBC Sunday evening drama Gentleman Jack. Gates open at 1:30 p.m. and there is ample free car parking in the adjacent field. Entrance for adults is £3, children are free, but it is assistance dogs only. And this is accompanied by a photograph of the Morris men at the St. Cross Fete with the stalls behind them, all covered under covers in front of the beautiful Henry Beaufort Tower, and with the sky, as it always seems to be for the St. Cross Fete, bright blue. And hopefully it will be tomorrow as well. I hope you get this in time to be able to make it.
Village Church Pell's appeal boosted by donation. And there's a picture of a smiling Bruce Purvis, secretary of the Winchester District Bellringers, handing over one of those very big cheques that you give to people, to two very smiling church wardens. The Bell's appeal at St Mary's Church Twyford has been boosted by a £2,500 donation. The eight bells need restoring after 70 years. The church hopes to replace three bells and renovate the other five, with further work on the tower and bell frame. In the 18th century, the local squire's life was saved when he was riding his horse in the early morning mist on the downs and suddenly heard the Twyford bells. He realised he was heading in the wrong direction, towards a chalk pit, and was convinced he would have died if he'd continued. So he left money in his will for the ringers of Twyford to have a supper on the anniversary. And to this day, the ringers ring the bells in the morning and the evening of October the 5th and toast William Davis at their supper after the reading of his will. The money for the renovation of the number 7 bell is generously gifted by Bruce Purvis, secretary of the Winchester District Bell Ringers, whose parents ran a grocery store in Twyford, and handed the cheque over for £2,500.
Change afoot to services at Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Winchester's MP says he remains positive about the future of the city's hospital, despite plans to change the location of certain operations. It is understood that emergency surgery on broken bones could be carried out at Basingstoke Hospital, while Winchester would become a hub for planned hip and knee ops. A report which last month went before the board of Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, HHFT, which runs the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, RHCH, in Winchester, as well as the Andover War Memorial Hospital and Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital, supported the move to Basingstoke. It said a major change was recommended in delivery of acute and elective services with a single site for the provision of major orthopaedic trauma. Plans are underway for 7-day trauma services on the Basingstoke site. By combining admissions on a single site, consultants' job plans can be altered to allow a ward round of admissions before and after the daily trauma list to improve compliance with Standard 2, which is currently 33% for this speciality. Standard 2 refers to the need for emergency admissions to be seen and assessed at the latest within 14 hours. The report adds, work is underway to make the required changes to staffing and infrastructure, and job plans will be altered to support the focus on emergency care required by the increase in numbers in due course, expected October 2019. However, It also included improvement plans at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital and Basingstoke for the delivery of emergency general surgery services, with building work already underway. Steve Brine said, "Our trust has shown itself in recent months, the opening of the new emergency department a good example, to be investing in Winchester, and I know there's more to come, which is why we can be positive about the future of the RHCH. It's absolutely right that there's an ongoing process, one that is clinically led, to ensure we're getting the right care in the right place when we're acutely unwell. I maintain very close relationships with the HHFT, and like my constituents, will want to be involved at every stage any proposed service change." A spokesman for the HHFT said plans were in the early stages. "We are working with our CCG partners to find ways to sustain and improve the emergency care of patients with orthopaedic trauma, in other words, emergency surgery for broken bones. We're also looking at creating a centre of excellence for planned hip and knee operations for the wider Hampshire population."
And here we have alert over fraudsters asking for passwords. Hampshire residents are being targeted by fraudsters posing as police officers. According to the police, callers are claiming to be from the fraud department. They are telling victims that there is counterfeit money in their bank account and the money needs to be withdrawn. Once victims have withdrawn this money, the fraudsters are then sending someone to act as a courier to collect the money from them. The fraudsters are calling from a no-caller ID, so their number cannot be traced. A police spokesman said, "Please remember that the police and your bank will never phone you to ask for your four-digit card PIN or your online banking password. Similarly, we would never send someone to your home to collect your cash, PIN, payment card or checkbook. Fraudsters can sound extremely professional and will do all they can to convince you that their call is genuine. Be aware that criminals may already have some information about you, such as your name and address, so don't assume that a call is genuine just because they have these details or because they claim to represent a legitimate organisation you use or a person that you know. Police are advising people to hang up and ring Action Fraud on 0300 123 2040. That's 0300 123 2040. A spokesperson from Action Fraud said, "Don't give your bank account details or sensitive information to anyone without carrying out your own research."
This is a rather grim item. Boy died after abuse as baby. A 15-year-old boy died as a result of health issues he suffered throughout his life from being shaken as a baby. Liam Murphy had severe quadriplegic cerebral palsy after he was subject to abuse by his father when he was just weeks old. Liam also suffered from scoliosis, epilepsy, was fed through a tube and had needed assistance to breathe as well as other disorders. An inquest into his death at Winchester Coroner's Court on Tuesday was told. He was born 3 weeks prematurely on August the 4th, 2001, but doctors grew suspicious when he was taken to hospital twice in the 3 months following his birth. But the most severe injuries were found after doctors at Southampton General Hospital examined baby Liam after he was admitted on October the 18th, 2001, when he had stopped breathing. Acting Sergeant Giulio Pizzo of Hampshire Police's Child Abuse Investigation Team told the inquest that Liam had suffered fractures to his rib, right humerus, tibia and metatarsal. An investigation was launched and it was found the injuries were more commonly associated with baby shaking. At the time of the incidents, Liam and his family were living in Andover. In 2002, Liam's father, Baron Murphy, now Granger, was convicted of grievous bodily harm and was sentenced to 12 years in prison, serving 8 following a trial at Winchester Crown Court. His mother, Shona Sherrington, was given a 2-year community order for neglect. When Liam was discharged from hospital, he was looked after by his grandparents and was later transferred to Naomi House Hospice because of the amount of care he needed. He remained there, and in the days leading up to his death at the age of 15, Liam suffered 3 seizures and had a chest infection, which eventually led to his death on July the 7th, 2017. A post-mortem found that Liam died of bronchopneumonia, immobilisation respiratory insufficiency and quadriplegic cerebral palsy with scoliosis and seizure. Pathologist Basil Perdue said there is a clear causal link between his injuries at the very early stage of his life and his death 15 years later. It was considered by the Crown Prosecution Service whether new charges should be brought against Mr. Granger in relation to Liam's death, but Acting Sergeant Pizzo said the Crown Prosecution Service decided that there was no case to answer, in effect, largely on the grounds of public interest. It was deemed that if Mr. Granger were to be charged, he would not be sentenced to significantly more than he had already served. Senior Coroner Graham Short concluded that Liam's death was as a result of an unlawful killing.
Mayor hears of work of Independence Charity. Winchester Live at Home hosted their 2019 annual review meeting, which was attended by Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Eleanor Bell. MHA Winchester Live at Home offers support and friendship to local older people living in their own homes, helping to maintain independent living, improve well-being and reduce isolation through a varied programme of volunteer-supported activities, outings and one-to-one services. The meeting gave attendees the opportunity to hear about the work of the scheme during 2018, as well as projects planned for this year and 2020. Anna Miles, Scheme Manager of MHA Winchester Live at Home, said, "We are looking into a variety of new projects for 2019 and 2020, including walking tennis, helping people achieve their bucket list, supporting community engagement in politics and local issues, and ways in which we could provide additional support for unpaid carers. We're also focusing on continuing our expansion across the Winchester district, having recently started a new group in Waltham Chase and are now exploring opportunities in Wickham and West Meon." She added, "We're always open to new ideas and welcome suggestions of new groups, activities or projects our members would like us to provide."
And now, ban for horse owner over animal neglect. A horse owner whose animals were discovered in a shocking condition at stables near Winchester has been found guilty of neglect. RSPCA inspectors found 2 of the horses with overgrown hooves and one so skinny that its hip bones and ribs were clearly visible. Investigators visited the stables in Silkstead Lane, Hursley, after calls from concerned members of the public. One inspector, Sharon Crisp, said she was shocked at the condition of the horses. Now their owner, Lorraine Gill, has been found guilty of neglecting 3 horses and causing 1 unnecessary suffering. The 56-year-old from Waltham Chase was absent from the sentencing at Southampton Magistrates Court on Monday of last week. The court heard how the RSPCA was contacted in May 2018 by equine charity World Horse Welfare after members of the public raised concerns about the horses. RSPCA inspector Sharon Crisp, who investigated, said, "Members of the public had been in touch because they were so concerned about the animals' overgrown hooves, and one horse in particular looked very skinny. They were worried that nobody seemed to them to be visiting the horses regularly and caring for them. When I arrived and saw the horses, I was shocked at their condition. The hooves on 2 of the ponies were overgrown and one was so thin his hip bones and ribs were clearly visible. The horses, named Inca, Paddy and Woody, were rehabilitated and found new homes. After spending a year in his loving new home, Paddy has since died," the court heard. Jill was found guilty of 3 counts of neglect and 1 count of causing unnecessary suffering to an animal, all between February 2018 and May 2018. She was banned from owning horses for 5 years, given a community order with a rehabilitation activity requirement for up to 10 days, and ordered to pay £750. And this is accompanied by the photograph of one of the horses, clearly with very overgrown hoofs and its ribs sticking out of its muddy and uncared for coat.
New charity nominated. A law firm has handed a Hampshire charity a boost by naming them as their chosen charity for the year. Each year, the law firm, which has offices in Southampton, asks staff to nominate and vote for their favourite charity. The charity of the year runs from May to May and benefits from donations raised by the firm's staff through a variety of activities like cake sales and raffles, quiz nights and charity walks. Lester Aldridge picked Naomi House and Jack's Place as their new chosen charity. Between May 2018 and May 2019, they raised £4,792.49 for their current charity then, which was the Alzheimer's Society. So now they are starting work for Naomi House and Jack's Place, which provides two hospices to give vital care and support to life-limited and life-threatened children and young adults and their families from Hampshire, Dorset, Wiltshire, Surrey, Berkshire, West Sussex and the Isle of Wight. Each year it costs around £8 million to run the hospices, less than 10% of which comes from government and statutory sources, so the charity relies on donations. Victoria Jones, partner and member of the law firm's fundraising team, said, "Since 2009, our amazing staff have raised thousands of pounds for nine local and national charities. During the last year, we've been delighted to fundraise for the Alzheimer's Society because dementia affects so many people and their families. We are also looking forward to supporting our new charity from 2019 to 2020, Naomi House and Jack's Place."
This sounds like a lot of fun. Wealth of piratical talent at Village Youth Theatre. Ropley Parish Hall was taken over by two swashbuckling groups of pirates recently when the local children's theatre staged their latest production, the highly amusing adventure of the Pirates of the Curry Bean. There were outstanding performances from this group of talented 7 to 11-year-olds, all of whom attend the local primary school. For three members of the cast, it was their last performance with this age group, as they'll be moving on to senior school in September, where their dramatic talents will be a huge asset. They will also have the opportunity to be part of the Ropley Youth Theatre. Ruby Stride gave a brilliant performance as Pearl, the bossy landlady of the Squirty Squid, managing to inject just the right amount of pathos into the role to bring a tear to the eye. Christabel Reed was fantastic as Captain Cod, particularly in her dealings with the inept Admiral Hornhonker, who was expertly played by Gabriel Wynne. Caitlin Knight, who is the only member of the group to have joined as a six-year-old, gave a polished performance as Lisa Periwinkle, who, along with her brother Jack, brilliantly played by Herbie Lewin, one of the exceedingly talented younger members, held the threads of the story together with the help of their very clever cat, Fiddlesticks, who was played to perfection by Emma McLachland. Luca Stables held the audience in the palm of his hand with his dramatic performance as Deadeye, whose job it was to link each part of the play as the story unfolded. Liana Bristow brought the infamous Captain Redbeard, whose beard was really pink, to life with the expertise of a professional as she swashbuckled her way across the ocean in the Curry Bean, ably assisted by her second-in-command, Loopy Louie, played with great humour by Phoebe Plank, and her two parrots, Squawk, beautifully played by Darcy Morgan Harris and Jessica Brandt. The crew of the Curry Bean, played with great enthusiasm by Harry Appleby Scriven, Max Arscott, George Caldwell, Sylvie Reed, Imogen Haslacher, Yasmin Buckles, Joyce Mahoney and Elsa Strachan-Smith gave the audience a real insight into the life of a pirate. And this is accompanied by wonderfully bizarre, colourful pictures of the children in their costumes on stage. I think that would have been a wonderful show to have been to see.
And here we have exhibition on Hampshire's gay liberation history. What have Claire Balding, Rupert Everett, Lord Alfred Douglas and Patrick Gay all got in common? They all have connections to Hampshire, either having been to school in the county or living in the county, and all can be identified as noteworthy LGBT plus persons. Over the last 2 years, Y Services LGBT plus youth groups have been involved in a heritage lottery project discovering some of Hampshire's history. The aims of the project included capturing information to archive for the future on aspects of the history of the county that are rarely documented. Young people have interviewed older LGBT plus people and visited archives and libraries to discover more about the past. On June the 28th, the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall riots in the USA when the gay liberation movement was born, Hampshire Record Office in Sussex Street, Winchester, will be displaying some of those findings. They include newspaper reports, posters, photos relating to LGBT plus issues. The display will run until mid-September and is free to view. Opening times are the same as the Record Office. In addition, Dr. Clifford Williams has produced a 36-page guide to accompany the display called A Queer A to Z of Hampshire. Copies are on sale in the Record Office at £2.50. On June the 2nd, Y Services were listed in the London Gazette as having been awarded the Queen's Award for Voluntary Organisations. They are one of only four organisations in the county that were given the honour this year. And this is accompanied by a photograph of an extract from a newspaper in Southampton in 1976, which announced that the world's first for gay conference was being held in Southampton.
And another item about Naomi House. This one has a photograph of four smiling people with a beautiful background of green fields and trees. And it's two of the directors of Naomi House and Jack's Place, and Naomi and David Cornelius Reed. And Naomi is holding the most exquisite bunch of 12 red roses. Her hospice has made an annual rent payment with a difference. The yearly tradition saw regular resident Caris pay the annual rent for Naomi House and Jack's Place in the form of 12 red roses rather than money. The tradition dates back to before Naomi House opened in 1997, when Mary Cornelius Reed kindly allowed a hospice to be built on her land in the Sutton Manor estate. The offer came with two conditions: that the hospice be named after her youngest daughter, Naomi, and that every Midsummer's Day the hospice pays a peppercorn rent of a dozen red roses. Mary passed away in 2014, but the tradition continues by presenting a bouquet of flowers to Naomi. The rent payment followed the Children's Hospice's Great Big House Party fundraising campaign. It seeks to raise money by getting people to hold parties of their own.
Rooftop protest at Trinity. A man staged a rooftop protest at Trinity Centre in Winchester. Simon Murray pitched a tent on the roof of the drop-in centre on Derngate. Mr Murray, 54, climbed up last Thursday night and slept on the roof of the building, which closed to other users on Friday. He said he has issues with the way the centre is being run, saying it's just a business and big business. He came down on Tuesday. Centre Director Sue McKenna said in a statement yesterday, "It all ended amicably. We offered GP and housing appointments to poor Simon." Trinity has operated in the city for more than 30 years, offering help and support to people who are homeless or marginally excluded. The Centre Operations Manager, Hannah Scott, said Mr Murray had been supported, including having a cold weather bed at the centre for 33 nights, and had been helped to seek a job and permanent accommodation, which he had turned down. Trinity had paid for travel to appointments and the cost of a birth certificate and driving licence. She said Trinity helps 600 people a year.
And here we have urgent appeal over Austin letter. Jane Austen's House Museum in Chawton is appealing for urgent public donations to save a precious section of a letter by Jane Austen. The novelist wrote the letter in 1814 whilst at the cottage in Chawton, which is now Jane Austen's house museum. The museum has until July the 31st to raise £10,000 towards the purchase cost of this rare and important fragment and bring it home to the museum. If it is unsuccessful, the letter could be lost to private hands. Dated November the 29th, 1814, the letter was written by Jane during a visit to London, where she was staying at her brother Henry's home. Addressed to Anna Austen, her niece, it mentions the Chawton home and includes glimpses into family detail and social history. A comment about family connections. I like first cousins to be first cousins and interested about each other. They are but one remove from brother and sister. It is reminiscent of Mansfield Park, a particularly pleasing connection, since Jane was in London to discuss a second edition of Mansfield Park. The letter finishes with a trip to the theatre and a typically Austenian quip. I took two pocket handkerchiefs but had very little occasion for either. Jane Austen's house museum is the only house open to the public where she lived and wrote. The house in College Street in Winchester, where she died in 1817, is a private home. The museum holds an unparalleled collection of Austen objects, including 12 of her letters, as well as others written by her close family circle. Additional treasures held by the museum include her jewellery, first edition of her books, and the table at which she wrote her much-loved novels. Rescuing this irreplaceable letter fragment will allow the museum to build its collection of Austen letters and advance the museum's vision to cherish and share Jane Austen's home, work and legacy. The museum has so far secured a proportion of the £35,000 negotiated purchase price, including £9,000 to be drawn from the Collecting Cultures grant awarded to the museum in 2015 by the National Lottery Heritage Fund. Dr. Mary Guyot, Museum Director, said, "Thanks to the support of funders, including the National Lottery Heritage Fund, we are well on our way to seeing this important item safe and secure in Jane Austen's own home. We are now calling on the museum's loyal supporters to take us over the finish line." And this is accompanied by a photograph of a section of the letter in Jane Austen's home in Chawton near Alton, and the classic drawing of Jane with her curls fringed around her head. And it should also be noted that sections of her letters are going to be read during the Winchester Festival on the walks, the 8th to the 11th of July in Winchester City.
Travellers move on to a new site. Travellers have taken over a piece of green land on the edge of Winchester, writes Michael Seymour. Winchester City Council is currently carrying out welfare and legal checks on the group, who are occupying land in Winton Close off Andover Road near to Peter Simmons College. It comes just days after travellers were moved on from the South Park and Ride site near Bushfield Camp. On Friday morning, Winchester City Council tweeted, "The travellers occupying the South Park and Ride car park have now vacated the site. Many thanks for your patience." The group had arrived at the Park and Ride car park on Wednesday. It is not known if the travellers in Winton Close are the same as those who occupied the Park and Ride side or when exactly they arrived in Winton Close, and it was unclear if the City Council will take legal action to evict the group.
Excuse me, I'm afraid that concludes the extracts for the week ending the 28th of June 2019. Thank you to our editors, Jane Pickard, Sheila Shepherd and Sheila Shepard. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now. And I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and please place the correct address label on the front of the wallet too. And return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you and goodbye again.